good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air, day two. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach, along with Calvin on the board, coming to you live from our studio in beautiful downtown Waukesha. You can always join us, too, at 844-967-2789 if you want to call or text. Or if you're watching us on the live stream, you can always leave a comment there as well. You can watch us on the Civic Media Channel on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. As she does every Thursday at this time, we are joined by Dr. Kristen Lyerly for our public cervix announcement. Good morning, Dr. K. How are you?
Good morning. I love the sound of Matt Nair on Air.
Thank you so much. It was it was a hasty meeting on Tuesday afternoon going, ooh, we got to call it something.
Uh-huh. It rhymes. It has a flow to it.
I think so, too. We did have one suggestion for it. We were taking suggestions yesterday, Dr. Lyerly, for show names, because this is kind of still a work in progress. Have you thought about this for a show name? Clear the Air with Jane Matt Nair and Greg and Greg the Funny Guy.
That's me.
Yeah. I like it. I think you could audition a lot of different things here. I don't think you can go wrong with this team.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Lyerly. I really appreciate that. We are going to start by talking about what happened in Texas. Oh, Texas, this week. A federal appeals court on Tuesday ruled Texas hospitals and doctors are not obligated to perform abortions under a longstanding national emergency care law. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, which is pretty much all Trump-appointed judges from what I understand, the federal law does not mandate any specific type of medical treatment, let alone abortion. The law does not govern the practice of medicine. So, Dr. Lyerly, in human person terms, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, the law does not govern the practice of medicine. Give me a break. That's what my whole job is about, what hostile politicians will and will not allow me to do. And it varies from state to state. So let's back up a little bit. What is this EMTALA law that we keep hearing about? Because that's really what this case is about. So EMTALA is the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act of Congress. It was enacted in 1986. And the whole point of this was to ensure, this is a quote, to ensure public access to emergency services regardless of ability to pay. This meant that if you went to the emergency department, you would be taken care of, period.
Regardless of your of how much money you have.
Right. You have insurance? Doesn't matter if whether you have insurance or not. You whatever your issue is, it is our obligation as medical providers to stabilize and or transfer you. That's it. So here's the problem. If you show up with, say, preterm labor, this happened to me last week. I had someone who showed up in preterm labor. We evaluated her. We stabilized her. She was good. We sent her off to a bigger hospital because we don't have the capacity to deal with early labors and really young babies. You show up with a heart attack. They're going to do the same thing. They're going to make a decision about whether they can care for you there. And if they can't, they're going to send you to a center where they can care for you. Breathing problems. I mean, name any list of things that you could show up in the emergency department for. But if you show up with an ectopic pregnancy, then what?
Right.
This is a pregnancy that's not viable.
It is never going to be a baby.
It is never going to be a baby. It is a pregnancy that has implanted somewhere inside of a person where it can't grow to be a full viable baby, whether it's in the tube, the fallopian tube, which is the most common thing.
Right.
It can be in the corner of the uterus. It can be on the ovary. It can be somewhere inside of someone's body on top of a large vessel threatening their life. So if someone shows up with an ectopic pregnancy, but they're not immediately at risk of dying, they don't have a belly full of blood, but we know that the outcome isn't good here. Can you treat them?
So now the answer is no, right?
Well, from a medical perspective, you're obligated to treat them. It's malpractice if you don't. But from a legal perspective in Texas, you can't, because you have to take the potential life of the embryo at that stage typically into account. So let me offer a different example. And I did see an ectopic pregnancy, by the way, last week, who we treated medically. And I was able to focus on her and what she needed and the best way to treat her within the context of her own life, which is how it should be.
Yes, it should be. And I just want to point out as well, Dr. Lyerly, that many of these women want this pregnancy, want these pregnancies. And then if you don't treat them in the way that they need, you can set them up so that they cannot conceive again if they do not receive the correct treatment.
Yeah, right? 100%. It's imperative that they understand what all of their options are so that they can determine what the next best step is as they're thinking about not only right now, but into the future. Like, the last thing you want is your medical provider not to be thinking about you in a holistic way.
Go ahead, Greg. I had two questions on this. You said you had one of these last week. How far along, is there an average of how far along you know when it's at the point where you're going to do a procedure like this? And the other question is the embryo, well, I guess the embryo is, it's not a miscarriage at this point. The embryo is still, the only reason why I ask this is because in my head, their defense is, well, that baby, because they called a baby, is still alive. And therefore, you can't do anything. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get inside their heads, which is a dumb thing to do, but still trying to understand it. So when they have a procedure like that, is there a time frame when it happens during the pregnancy? Or can it happen at any point?
It's usually early in the pregnancy, but at any point early in the pregnancy. Yeah. And really, I mean, we've got options. I've treated ectopics with nothing, where if I know that my patient has access, they're close to a hospital, it looks like we've got lab numbers that show that the pregnancy is kind of resolving on its own, because if it doesn't get enough blood supply, it can't survive. So sometimes you don't have to do anything and it just resolves on its own. That's a risky proposition, because you have to make sure that your patient is able to get the care that they need immediately. If they can't, it could cost them their lives.
Yeah.
So you could do nothing. You can treat them with medicine. And one of the medicines is methotrexate, which is another medicine that's like mifepristone and misoprostol. Methotrexate has been on the list of things that could potentially be banned because it is associated with termination of an ectopic pregnancy. That was the route we went with this patient, because she had a job. She had to work. She couldn't afford to have a surgery where she had to take a couple weeks off.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, we talked through all of the alternatives. We picked the best option for her. And then the third option is surgery. And surgery is the only option if it's an unstable pregnancy. So if there's blood in the belly, if it looks like it's ruptured, if the patient's vital signs are unstable, then really you have to do surgery to save her life.
If you're just joining us, Dr. Kristen Lyerly is our guest for our weekly public cervix announcement. And we're talking about a federal appeals court in Texas that ruled this week that doctors aren't obligated to perform abortions under a longstanding national emergency care law. Dr. Lyerly, when I see these arguments and I see some of the things put forward, I feel sometimes like they just don't care if women die.
They don't. So I actually, when you brought this up, we were going to talk about like yeast infections or something. And Jane's like, let's talk about what's happening in Texas. So luckily, I have friends in Texas who practice medicine there, not in Houston, not in Austin, but in East Texas and West Texas, in those rural areas where it's really pretty dicey. And my friend who practices in West Texas is actually an attorney as well. So I asked him for his take on it, and this is exactly what he told me. Physicians can provide stabilizing treatment, except we can't touch the pregnancy, even to prevent death or injury to the mother. He said this is another example of lawyers making medical decisions that adversely affect the citizens of this nation. And this is the climate that he is trying to take care of his patients in. It's impossible.
And it's terrifying. It has got to be terrifying for women in these states who want a family, who want a child, to then decide to go forward with this, because if something goes wrong, you can't get any help.
Well, as you mentioned, Jane, these are typically desired pregnancies.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can share another story of a patient who I took care of, luckily in Minnesota, which is a place where I can focus on my patients.
Right.
This is a woman who had undergone infertility treatment to get pregnant. She desperately wanted this baby, but she showed up 21 weeks pregnant, bleeding profusely, unstable. I had to take her to the operating room immediately. Wow. And I had to perform an abortion to save her life. There was no question. And I didn't even, like, I stopped for a minute to think, if I was in Wisconsin, I'd be really worried right now, because this was before abortion was again legal in Wisconsin. Yeah. But I mean, even in Minnesota, as I'm trying to focus on, you know, like, does she need blood? Who else do I need to call to come to the operating room? Who else do we need to notify in her life? How do we pull all the pieces together? Because this is an emergency. It has to happen right away. And her heart is broken because she's losing this baby. But I could take care of her.
Yeah.
What happens in Texas in this situation?
Well, yeah, you die.
It sounds like you're going to have to be one doctor who's going to say, I'm doing this and arrest me. Just see where they will go. Honestly, it's a put up or shut up. It's like, if I'm a doctor, I have to take care of this person and I will put my well-being on the line because this person needs help. That's my job. As you were just saying, you don't do it. It's malpractice. Then let the lawyers say, all right, come at me, which is kind of what I feel like they're doing in Wisconsin with the district attorney in Sheboygan. Mm-hmm. He's like saying, I won't do it. But some people are saying, trust you.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, my friend in East Texas, she said, this is a quote from her, this is blatant disregard for the lives of women at a time when our maternal mortality crisis is at an epidemic level. She said, it angers me that these laws are passed under the guise of protecting lives while women's lives are clearly not valued or protected.
Yeah, it's pretty much pro-birth, not really pro. It's like, once you're born, if you get born, you're on your own, kid. All right. Yeah. Dr. Lyerly is here. We are going to kick around cannabis when we return.
Yeah, man.
Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. We are on the Civic Media Radio Network. Face the strange changes. Pretty soon now you're going to get older. Time may change me, but I can't trace time. I said that time may change me. Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach, along with Calvin on the board, joining you from downtown Waukesha. And as she is every Thursday, Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us from 11 to 11:30 for a public cervix announcement. If you ever have any questions for her, you can always text them in, or you can call at 844-967-2789. Or if you're watching on the live stream, you can leave a comment there as well. Before we move on to talking about cannabis, Dr. Lyerly, we have a question that we want to get to. We were talking about this federal appeals court this week that ruled that Texas hospitals and doctors aren't obligated to perform abortions under a national emergency care law. So, Greg, what is the question from our text?
Andrew from Maine asked the question, in the case of the East Texas doctor friend, hypothetically, could the pregnant patient's partner sue the state for malpractice that leads to the death of a patient?
There is a case pending in Texas right now, and I'm a doctor, not a lawyer, and I don't know this in depth, but there is at least one case that's pending where doctors or where patients are saying that they were inadequately treated because of Texas law. And, you know, to be clear about my friend in East Texas, who is also a mom, by the way, she said she treats the patient, and her hope is that a hostile DA will not come after her, but she knows that treating an ectopic could be actionable. It could put her career at risk, her life at risk. She said she's exhausted.
Yeah.
And she also says that as the mom of a five-year-old girl who is already talking about being a mommy at some point in her life, she just doesn't know. She doesn't see a future where she can protect her daughter's dreams and protect her daughter's life.
And again, I ask folks to wrap your head around the fact that no matter what you do, an ectopic pregnancy is not going to result in a baby. It's just not. It is medically impossible. So preventing a woman from having a procedure in order to rid her of an ectopic pregnancy is not pro-life.
And but that's why I asked the question, because in their head, you never know. That's literally their stance. You never know.
Why?
We do know.
Yeah.
And you can't take the ectopic pregnancy and transplant it into the uterus. That was actual legislation that was introduced in Ohio a few years ago, where they wanted to make it mandatory to transplant the ectopic pregnancy into the uterus. But the funny thing about that is it has never been done because it is impossible.
Let me guess, the people who put forth that bill looked like me.
Not nearly as handsome or funny.
Stop it.
But I do think, Dr. Lyerly, that is one of the things that infuriates me more than anything. It is all these men, primarily, mm-hmm. with no medical experience, who are making these determinations because they know best. So for those men, I just want to make sure that when you have a heart attack or a stroke, that you go to your plumber for advice. Because he should be the one advising you.
No, go to the doctor, go to the emergency department. I love men. I personally created four men. Men are wonderful and men are affected by this.
Oh,
but to
yeah.
look
yes.
at that appeals court and those three white guys who they say in this, I skimmed the ruling. They say that they don't want to make abortion mandatory. Like that is really what their message is here. When I'm saying I need to save people's lives and not just save their lives, but prevent the inability to carry a pregnancy in the future, you know, yeah. to preserve their future fertility, to preserve their emotional, their mental stability, their, you know, there's so much more to it than that. Just one point in time. These are sentinel events that affect people for the rest of their lives. And if they are not truly taken care of in a thoughtful, evidence-based way, what happens after that?
And I also want to remind folks that, and this was also in Texas, there were at least five women, I think, who tried to bring a lawsuit because they lost they had unviable pregnancies. They weren't able to get treatment for it. One woman was very close to death before yeah. she could finally get treated. They actually didn't allow one of these plaintiffs to continue in the case because she lost her ability to reproduce after she couldn't get care. So they said she had no standing because abortion would no longer affect her. This issue would no longer affect her because she could no longer reproduce.
I don't even know what to do with that information.
That is real Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah. It is. Absolutely. All right. We are going to move on in the couple of minutes that we have, and we're going to talk dope.
Okay. Okay. You undercover cop.
It's
no, this is a thing. Have you heard of cannabis hyperemesis syndrome?
Never. What is that?
Tell me, Doc. Go ahead. Tell me. What is it, man?
Hyperemesis means that you're throwing up all the time.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Nope.
So cannabis hyperemesis syndrome is something that we're seeing more commonly as we're seeing more frequent and casual use and over a longer period of time. So chronic use of more than once a week, typically since adolescence, can result in nausea, vomiting, dehydration, abdominal pain, and frequent emergency department visits. They're actually seeing more and more of this in the emergency department. And the way that I first found out about this was we would see it not uncommonly in women who were trying to treat their nausea related to pregnancy.
Oh.
So when I was in training 10 years ago, we saw a handful of women who came in, were frequent cannabis users, and they would just disappear from the triage area. And we would find them in patient rooms taking showers. Because that's part of this. You have this compulsive need to take a shower or a bath because that helps you feel better. It's actually part of the diagnostic criteria.
That is wild.
Okay. You're all lying. What is this?
Using too much pot makes you feel nauseated, vomit, and want to take a shower.
And that just, I mean, here's the thing is, and I mean this, I don't do any drugs. I just don't. I know I look like I invented drugs, but but I've known people who've been doing this for a long time. Like, what is it something about the marijuana that they're smoking or ingesting that's different now? Because when my friends were younger in high school, this wasn't something they were afflicted with. Is it something you'd have to intake for years and years and years and years? And it's so interesting.
Yeah, it really is more about chronic use, chronic frequent use, and it just kind of builds up in your system. And then you end up with these GI symptoms, this, you know, belly pain and frequent nausea. And of course, if you're throwing up all the time, you're going to be dehydrated.
Yeah.
So they're seeing this a lot in especially the pediatric population.
Wow.
With people who are just smoking, you know, large amounts over a long period of time.
Hey, it's about the portion control, people. But portion control.
Everything in moderation, my friend.
Thank you very much. Dr. Kristen Lyerly, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Have a great week. We will talk to you next Thursday at 11:06.
On Matt and Air in the morning, baby.
Matt and Air on air. Stay close. Paul Noonan is coming up next. We're going to talk sports. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jay Matt and Air, Greg Bach, and Calvin on the board with you, coming to you live from our studio in beautiful downtown Waukesha. If you want to join us, you can call or text 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. Or if you're watching us on the live stream on the Civic Media Network, you can find us on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter, and leave a comment on the live stream as well. He is here every other week to talk all things sports balls. He is our sports guru from the Acme Packing Company, Paul Noonan. Good morning, Paul. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. All right, let's talk Packers and the Bears. How are we feeling about this?
I think we feel pretty good about it, but it's not going to be as easy as it was last time. Chicago has improved fairly drastically over the second half of the season, especially on defense. A lot of media in Chicago have developed an increased opinion of Justin Fields, their quarterback. In reality, he hasn't actually improved very much. That's sort of a mirage. But their defense has improved a ton. They started off as one of the worst defenses in the league. We obviously destroyed them in game one. But they have been, over the last four games, by some of our advanced metrics, about the fifth best defense in the league.
Wow.
And a lot of that is due to the development of their secondary, Jalen Johnson and Tyreek Stevenson in particular, young corners who've come along. Jalen's not that young, but have come along and have turned into some of the best shutdown corners in the league. So the Packers, I do think, are still the better team, but this is not going to be just a roll like it often is against the Bears.
It just seems unusual to me that all of a sudden this late in the season, it's like, oh my God, we're finally getting it together.
Yeah.
You know,
it kind of happened for our offense kind of the same way. They did. There's some catalysts here too. At the trade deadline, the Bears actually made an acquisition, even though they were pretty terrible at the time. They got Montez Sweat from Washington.
What was the name again?
Montez Sweat. like Sweat.
S-W-E-A-T. Nope, that's great. I love it.
Montez Sweat's really good. He was stuck on a very bad Washington team. The Bears actually still kind of struggle with pass rush. That is their Achilles heel on defense. But Sweat gives them at least the semblance of a good pass rush, which is really all they needed for their secondary to start playing better. He is a force. He's not as good as Danielle Hunter, who we faced last week and shut down. So that's why I'm optimistic. But that actually did kind of catalyze their development on defense. They've really been good lately. They're tough.
Well,
offense is a different story, which is the other good thing.
That plays a role in it, too. But defense is critically important. And I can remember the first time that the Packers actually won the Super Bowl in the 90s after that long, long drought. And that was what that was the mantra at the time is like defense is what wins Super Bowls.
Yeah.
It is. And, you know, the Bears have been typically pretty good at putting defenses together. Even when we've had our nice, like, recent rivalries with the Lovie Smith Bears, when they've had their bad quarterbacks and their bad receivers, they do bring the defense every once in a while, and they seem to actually have the makings of a good one here. Up and down, their personnel is actually pretty good. Now, offense is the different story here. They're not hopeless on offense like they often are, because they do have DJ Moore, who is still one of the best receivers in football and has been carrying them lately. And their offensive line has gotten quite a bit better. They put a lot of draft capital into it. Their quarterback is still a problem. Justin Fields is not a good passer. If you take out his running, he's one of the three worst passers in the league. He's only really good when throwing to Justin Fields and occasionally to Cole Kmet, their tight end, he's okay. He's not great. But there's only three people to shut down on this offense. And it's DJ Moore. If you double him, you'll be fine. It's Cole Kmet. And then it's just not having Fields rush for 150 yards. Now, the problem for the Packers is Joe Barry lets all that stuff happen all the time. Like, he is not good at stopping rushing quarterbacks. He's not good at shutting down one good receiver.
What is he good at?
Absolutely nothing. Say it again.
Pretty much nothing. There's one thing I'd say he's good at, which is that he's good at playing a really safe shell against quarterbacks who only can really air it out deep. He's actually kind of good against Patrick Mahomes for that reason. Not that he can't do that, but he gets impatient. But against anybody else, he's not good. And Justin Fields, he's not good. Like, if you have a running quarterback, Barry's defenses tend to struggle. And that's what you got here. Like, you have the best running quarterback. So I'm a little worried about this game. I don't think it'll be a walk. I'll pick the Packers in this game. But if Joe Barry screwed it up and the Bear defense did enough to slow down the Packer offense so that they lose, I won't be that surprised by it.
The question I have then is, let's say after the game's done, Packers win. What needs to happen next for them to move forward in one of the most ridiculous seasons I've ever witnessed as a Packer observer?
So if they win, they're in the playoffs, for one thing. So
it's just automatic. If they win, they are in the playoffs.
If they win, they do not need any help if they win.
Okay.
They control all tiebreakers. That is just that. They can actually get in a couple of ways if they lose this game. If they lose and Minnesota, Seattle, and one of Tampa or Atlanta loses, then they also get in. So those are really interesting. If they lose, math's crazy. Not that they deserve to be in. And if they do win this game, they can be as high as the sixth seed, where they would probably go to Detroit for the first round of the playoffs, or as low as the seventh, where they would probably go to Dallas for the first round of the playoffs. And, you know, if you go to Detroit, you can maybe do some damage there.
I mean, or they could just beat us up.
Yeah, that's a potential too. Paul Noonan is our guest from the Acme Packing Company. He is our sports guru to talk about all things sports. We did touch on this a little bit yesterday, Paul, but I want to get your opinion on douchebag. I'm sorry, Aaron Rodgers. And the little back and forth he had going with Jimmy Kimmel. So what's your take on that?
Aaron, I feel like, a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on him. He likes to shoot his mouth off, has for a long time, but I think we don't give him enough flack for saying actively harmful things. Like, there's a lot of people who just promote random conspiracy theories or diets that don't work or pyramid schemes, things along the lines that Aaron talks about.
Right. Yeah.
But I wrote a lot of negative stuff about Aaron during the COVID crisis for his take on vaccinations, because he's influential.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Not everybody sits there reading, firsthand accounts of vaccine efficacy in their free time. Some people just get their information by what they absorb casually in the media. And Aaron Rodgers taking an anti-vaccine stance without knowing what he's talking about is actively harmful. And here again, just shooting his mouth off without, you know, thinking of the consequences. First of all, I don't know Jimmy Kimmel from anything or, you know, whatnot, but Aaron Rodgers certainly has no inside information about the proclivities of Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah.
And connecting him to Jeffrey Epstein, while maybe not meeting the legal definition of defamation or slander or libel. Skating along there. It's tough against public figures.
Yeah.
So it probably isn't. But, like, it does rouse a certain chunk of the population to make actual threats at people when you do that. And, you know, whether it's legally anything that Jimmy can pursue him for or not, it's really irresponsible. It just is. Like, it's putting innocent people possibly in danger. Yep. Aaron does stuff like that too much. And I think Pat McAfee, whose show he said that on, tried to slough it off as just a war of words. And Pat does not take enough responsibility for having Aaron on at this point either. Rogers has gone from, I think, a morbid curiosity that gets people to show up into something that's something different, something kind of gross. Yeah. And it's probably time to cut off that pipeline for him and relegate him to, you know, backwater media a little bit more than he is.
Well, I always felt, I mean, he was always different. He certainly had a different take on things, but I swear after he went in underground for 3 days, what, in his sensory deprivation chamber or whatever, he has been just wacko since he came out of there.
He was never, that's the thing, is people didn't realize is that he was never a nice guy.
He was, apparently not.
No. He was nice to the fans. He put on a good face for the advertisers, but players and reporters and other people in the industry have said he is not a good person.
Was that your experience, yeah, Paul?
I mean, I've never talked to the guy personally, but yes. I mean, first of all, a lot of high-level professional athletes are that. Like, Michael Jordan was that. Michael Jordan had that persona forever of being the nicest, like, on Nike commercials and underwear commercials and whatnot and smiling, and everybody looked up to him. Michael Jordan's a jerk. Everybody knows Michael Jordan's a jerk now. Aaron Rodgers, he had a very managed persona, and as soon as he started getting himself in front of cameras all the time, that management starts to go away, and you start to see what's actually there. And it's not surprising that he's a jerk. That's just how a lot of high-level athletes are. They think they can, they're the smartest guy in the room, that they're better than everybody else. And, you know, at football, that's true. At other things, not so much.
Yeah, maybe. All right, we're going to move on and talk about the Bucks and the Bucks' problems against the Pacers. What is going on with that, Paul Noonan?
The Pacers. So first of all, the Pacers do, I think, have their number a little bit. And part of that is the Pacers and Bucks have played each other a ton this season. I think this was like their seventh or eighth game last night. They played twice in like 4 days. I feel like that's happened a few times, too. And the Pacers have definitely developed a formula that works against the Bucks, which is just frustrate Giannis and pick and roll them to death to some extent. The Bucks have not adjusted back. And the worst thing about the loss last night is often there's a huge element of luck in any NBA game that's based on how many three-pointers you make. Like, if you have a bad night shooting threes, you can lose to anybody. If you have a good night, you can kind of beat anybody. The Pacers beat the Bucks last night, making like 20% of their threes. I think it was actually like 15-ish. And that is a sign that you were really outplayed. You know, that's a game you should just luck into winning with an average performance. And that's happened a couple times against the Pacers too this year. They don't seem to have an answer for Haliburton on the defensive end. And they really have kind of settled into the Bucks are a team that if it's clicking on offense, they can put up these Herculean offensive performances from time to time when Lillard and Giannis are clicking together and Middleton's actually playing healthy. And that overcomes any defensive woes they have. But as soon as they run into a team that knows how to attack their defense and especially like is able to get into the paint and draw Lopez out and draw Giannis out and actually hit their threes, which they didn't have to, they have trouble with that. That's going to be a problem in the playoffs if they don't fix it. And maybe it won't be a problem in the playoffs because regular season basketball and playoff basketball are very different things. But it's worrisome that it continues to be a problem. And against the Pacers, who have kind of developed this little chippy rivalry with the Bucks, I feel like the Bucks should show up against that team at least.
Is that where the whole game ball was? It the Pacers?
That is,
the whole
that
game
is
ball?
The Pacers.
Game ball gates.
Okay.
It's the Bucks have not reacted well to game ball gate. You know, you would think you'd show up and want to blow the doors off of the Pacers, and instead the opposite has happened.
Interesting. All right. With a couple of minutes that we have left, Paul, let's talk about the Badgers losing their bowl game.
Very uneven year for Luke Fickell in his first year. And the Badgers played well in this game. Like, Tanner Mordecai looked better than he did all season. They passed the ball extremely well against a LSU. Had a lot of people sit out who were going pro. That's how LSU rolls, especially the quarterback.
Wow.
But their defense was still really, really talented. And it was a good performance that Wisconsin really should have won, that Luke Fickell really lost for them. He proved to be much more conservative as a play caller than I think anybody expected. We had Paul Christ outgoing with a reputation of being really conservative and being like a run first guy. And you expect Fickell and his air raid stuff to get in here and just be throwing it all over the place. But the one thing he doesn't do is attempt to go for it on fourth down, on fourth and short. And there were four opportunities in this game to do so, and they punted it every time, including from the LSU 37-yard line. And aside from having a lot of math on this at this point, especially in college, it's just a smart idea to do it. It's easy to pick up a yard in college. There's all kind of rules that make it easy to pick up a yard in college. You can block downfield on passes. It's not allowed in the NFL. And he doesn't do it. And he left, I would say, something like 17 to 21 points. Yeah, that's probably too much. But, you know, more than the margin of victory on the field, just by not being a little bit more risk-taking than he's did that all year. Cost him quite a few games. So I'd like to see that improve. And the players don't like it when you don't have the confidence in them to go for it as well. So that should have been a big victory over a good SEC team that the coach just sort of lost.
Paul Noonan is our guest every other Thursday at this time to give us an update on all things sports balls. He is with the Acme Packing Company and writes for a number of publications. Paul Noonan, thank you so very much. Happy New Year.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you in a couple weeks. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on air across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Yes, the Bears still suck. All the ladies now.
Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin on the board, joining you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha.
It's like they made that song for you. It's like so rock and roll, just like you.
Oh, yes. I am the epitome of a rock chick. That is exactly what I am, Greg Bach. Thank you for joining us today for day two of Matt Nair on Air. And you can always join us, call or text 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. Or if you're watching on the live stream, on the Civic Media stream, on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, you can leave a live stream comment there as well. I did want to mention this because this is something that also came out today. The two consultants, this is from the Associated Press, the two consultants hired who are going to look at drawing new maps for the state of Wisconsin are going to be paid up to $100,000 each in taxpayer money under the terms of their contracts that were made public today. Each of them will be paid an hourly rate of $450. Whoa. The state director of courts has the authority to exceed the maximum amount if it is determined that's necessary.
Wow.
It's a good job if you can get it, man.
Good chunk of change. Either that or, you know, I mean, or maybe they'll pay for another five-star vacation.
Well, and you know how much I love to complain about the way Robin Voss likes to spend taxpayer money.
Yeah.
$2 million chasing down bogus stories about election fraud for which no evidence was ever actually uncovered.
As a reminder.
They spent $2 million bucks on that and found nothing. So I guess I don't really have a problem with them spending $200,000 of our money to draw fair maps.
Yeah. Important.
It is important.
It's important work, and I don't. And if we're paying good people to do it, then yes.
844-967-2789 844-96-PARTY. We have a big show coming up tomorrow as well. I think people, again, we have very short memories. Saturday is January 6th.
Correct.
This is the third anniversary of the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. And in these last 3 years, it has been pretty remarkable to me the way some of our lawmakers are trying to present what happened that day.
Yes, in a very, a pretty narrative now. A patriotic narrative.
A patriotic narrative.
Very patriotic narrative now. It's
which again, is interesting to me because on the one hand, it's all Antifa, Greg.
Yeah.
They were all Antifa.
And the crooked FBI.
And the crooked FBI, but they're all patriots.
They're all patriots.
So I'm not sure which is which.
They're all Antifa, but we don't want to unblur their faces, so that way the FBI we don't want and them the to CIA can't prosecute you.
Right, right. Okay. I mean, yeah, it just all, this whole
like
narrative.
It's like not even trying anymore. They just don't, like, I remember the hypocrisy, a good old hypocrisy of McConnell. It was just, make your blood boil, make your head spin. This is just like, you're just dumb. I don't understand how they can possibly frame this narrative as what you were just saying. It's Antifa. We don't want to, you know, but they're patriots.
But they were also peaceful, and it was a regular tourist visit.
But they're Antifa, and lock them up.
Because they were violent, but not the patriots.
Exactly.
So it's really interesting to me. We're going to have a special guest on tomorrow. Mike Smith is a retired U.S. Navy Rear Admiral who has been in the Navy for over 30 years. He has formed the National Security Leaders for Biden. He formed that in 2020. It's an independent, nonpartisan organization, which includes over 1,000 former senior national security Republicans, Democrats, and independents.
Yeah.
And Admiral Smith is in Milwaukee and Madison today and tomorrow, and he's addressing groups talking about the threat to our democracy by Donald Trump. And again, the apparent attempt to whitewash what happened on January 6th. And I watched the whole thing live.
Yeah.
I remember it like I remember where I was on the day of 9/11.
Yes. Same.
I will never forget watching that unfold and sitting there in such disbelief. How is this even happening?
I was at work when it was happening and we were watching. We wanted to watch them secure the vote and make it.
Which, by the way, before 3 years ago on January 6th, nobody gave a flying hoot about the certification of votes.
Absolutely,
it was a nothing burger. No. It was nothing.
I'm sorry, nothing burger is funny, but we were at work, and because it was such an important thing, like because the former president had made such a big deal of it, we wanted to see it happen. Like we won't trust it until we see it happening. And I remember going back and watching, we were watching on my laptop. And I just said to my coworkers, I think something's happening when I saw smoke.
Yes. Tear gas.
Yep. And it was horrific to watch. And then you saw the pictures of certain parts of the building on fire. And I mean, it just, the fact that one of the worst days in our country isn't one of the most educational days of our country. Instead, we're just like, that's fine.
It was a regular tourist visit.
Yeah, they were walking between the ropes.
They were all well behaved except for the Antifa people.
They were patriots and Antifa, just those two groups.
It's not confusing. It's all just fine.
Yeah, yeah. So, everyone poops in people's offices.
Apparently so.
Yep.
So join us tomorrow.
Yeah.
Retired U.S. Navy Rear Admiral Mike Smith is going to be here from 11:30 to 12 o'clock tomorrow to talk about his concerns on the eve of January 6th, the third anniversary of the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol is this Saturday. So Admiral Smith will be joining us tomorrow starting at 11:30. Stay close. The news is coming up next, followed by the one and only The Todd Father. Todd, all the show kicks off right after the news from noon until 2 p.m. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for texting. Greg, Calvin, thank you for all your help. I hope you all find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.